RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
You know how fast NFL game days move. One big play and everything changes. That's why live betting on FanDuel is a game changer. With FanDuel, you can bet in real time while the game unfolds. Score just flipped? Jump on a new spread or live money line. That wide receiver's heating up? Bet the next touchdown score or total yards. Think that drive stalls in the red zone? Take a live field goal prop or fade the total. Live player props, team totals, drive results, updated spreads, next play markets, it's all there. It's fast, it's fun, and with FanDuel, your live bets move as quickly as the game does. So whether you're riding momentum or fading the hype, FanDuel puts you right in the middle of every moment. Visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan to download the app and bet the NFL live all season long.
Must be 21 plus and present in Virginia. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Shopping is hard.
I can never find anything in my size.
I don't even know my size.
I buy my clothes the same place I buy my groceries.
There's a better way. Make it easy with Stitch Fix. Just share your size, style, budget, and done. Your personal stylist sends pieces picked just for you.
That was easy.
Stitch Fix, online personal styling for everyone. Free shipping and returns, no subscription required. Get started today at stitchfix.com.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. 2 new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back. We're better. Let's get it.
Anybody, anywhere, yeah. Anywhere.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson.
This pass caught by Paulson, the tight end.
And from 106.7 The Fan, Grant Paulson.
Welcome in to Take Command. Hopefully everybody had a wonderful and a Merry Christmas. Everybody's enjoying a happy holiday week and is looking forward and getting ready for the new year. With Logan Paulson, who was in the NFL for a decade, I'm Grant Paulson. You can watch the show on the 106.7 The Fan and Team 980 YouTube channels. You can subscribe, rate, and review, and get the audio of this podcast wherever you get any of your pods. Logan, happy holidays, buddy. How are you?
Happy holidays to you, too. I'm great, man. You know, it's such a fun season, you know, with the kids. And obviously, like, I know the team's not doing super well, but it was fun to go watch the game the other day and be out amongst the fans. And everyone was super stoked. And just it was kind of a unique way to spend Christmas. You know what I mean? So it was fun. Like, I had a good time, and I'm glad that they put a competitive product out on the field. It was a good time.
There were way more people at the game than I thought. You know, I had joked during the week that it was going to be a ghost town and no one was going to go. It did seem like a lot of the diehard fans of this team really took it as a challenge. Like, how much do I want to be out there? Or maybe even made it part of, like, the Christmas tradition for this one week or something. But they had a nice turnout. The lower bowl was pretty full. There were a ton of Cowboys fans, as there always are. But I thought there was a lot of burgundy and gold in the lost season as well.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely thought, you know, like last week versus Philly, I was like, man, this kind of feels like a Philly game. This one, I felt like it was a little bit more 50-50, maybe 60-40 in favor of Washington, which was awesome. And, you know, we do the pregame show, we do the postgame show, and there was a ton of people there, like bringing their kids. This is my first, you know, first NFL football game, sign this stuff. And I don't know, it was a much better environment than I was anticipating. And I think the crowd was pretty good in terms of sound and kind of environment. So, you know, it was awesome that people chose to spend their Christmas that way and, you know, bring the kids out, bring the family out. And, you know, there are people coming from all over the place. There's people coming from Florida, come up from here, you know, like, so it was a ton of fun.
That's amazing for the kids that are going to game one with dad or with the family.
Yeah.
I think that there's something really romantic about the holidays and football in that way. And you just said it. We'll get into our normal, regularly scheduled pod here. I want to start with our offensive breakdown this segment. We can get to the defense next segment. But before we even do that, you know, they were competitive. I didn't know what to expect in terms of product. Like, this game's about human beings. These guys have families in town. They're thinking about the holidays and their kids as well. And then you're going to play this fairly meaningless game. Now, you can make the case for the Cowboys as well, who have been eliminated. But they were down 21-3 after the 86-yard touchdown to Kevontae Turpin, which was the third longest touchdown catch of the NFL season given up by anybody. And you thought, oh, no, this is about to be really ugly. Bill rips off a 10-yard touchdown. He would later rip off a 72-yard touchdown. We'll break him down. But they got right back into this game and throughout, you know, ended up being a one possession kind of back and forth game. They finished 33-23. I thought that was admirable, to be honest. I normally don't do the, you know, points in a loss or moral victory Monday thing, but it's not that common with a team with a 4-11 or 4-10 record or whatever. And in this case, 4-11 to be down by 18 on a holiday and to come back the way they did said something, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just speaks to kind of the vibe change since Dan's taken over a defensive coordinator. Like, they've been in competitive football games. They've played hard. Obviously, there's the Minnesota game, which is the outlier. But I think this is what, you know, like if I own the team, and I don't have enough money, obviously. But if I own the team, like, this is the kind of in a season that's been so affected by injury. In this game, it gets worse. Obviously, there's more injuries we got to talk about. But again, like, to see them play this competitive against a rival, against a team that blew them out earlier in the season at home on Christmas Day, to kind of, there's no quitting that dog. And there's a lot of reasons why I think fans should be frustrated, but I also think there's a lot of reasons coming out of this game why fans should be optimistic just from a purely X's and O football standpoint. So again, like, it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I think you bring up a great point. Like, they had every reason to be like, man, 21-3 is a tough one in a game that means nothing. And I've been a part of teams that have done that, right? You're just kind of like, hey man, not our day today. Let's get ready for Cabo, you know, 1-2-3, Cabo on 3, 1-2-3, Cabo. Let's get the heck out of here, right? So, and again, they didn't do that. And so I have a lot of respect for the guys on the roster, the coaches. And again, like, I know they make a lot of money and I know all these different things, but these games are really, really hard. Really, really hard to lock in for. And they're really, really hard when they're not going well. And so for those guys to kind of have the competitive pride to say, hey, man, this isn't who we want to be. This is not how we want to be represented, I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I think we can sit here and say that in good faith today, and I think it'll be met decently by people in a 4-12 season. Like, nobody's trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes on what this year has been. This has been disastrous. I mean, they were 12-5 a year ago. They may end up 4-13, you know, this year, and that's a really, really bad thing. Having said that, if they played with this kind of effort when they got down big, and if they put in the game that they did this week, the record would not have been that way. And I think most people listening to this probably understand that. All right, so let's get to the offensive breakdown then. I wanted to actually start with Cliff Kingsbury because I wanted to give him some flowers, actually. They only ran 41 plays. When I buzzed back through the you know, just looking at this, Logan, 41 plays is nothing. Just as a comp, okay, just so people are on understanding, the Cowboys ran 87 plays in this game.
I have 92 plays written down with penalties, obviously, included. But that's like it's just such a drastic difference in time of possession and how you handle the football.
Close to 18 minutes time of possession. But where I wanted to address Cliff here is, in those 41 plays, boy, did they get some bang for their buck. About 8 yards per play. I thought he was in his bag a little bit. They even tried to run a trick play, double pass thing that ends up getting sniffed out, so they couldn't run that. But in terms of percentage of explosives, and we can go through some of the specifics, 72 yards, 41 yards, 30 yards, 29 yards. Like, this was as good as it's gotten this year in terms of that percentage of 25-plus, as well as the yards per play. They did some really good things offensively with a third-string quarterback in there, no less, who hadn't started in years.
Yeah, man. And, you know, I went back and watched the game last night also, you know, because I'm sitting here at 12 o'clock watching the game back. And the thing I thought that they really did a good job of is they understood what Eberflus wanted to do, right? Like, they said, hey, he wants to be a cover three type guy, and these are going to be his change-up pitches, right? So, you know, on the first drive of the game, I think that's a great example. They're running some type of middle field closed, looks like cover three to me, and they hit a little out to Treylon Burks. They hit a comeback to Terry McLaurin, and then it's like, okay, now we're going to get into man coverage, and they end up running that screen to Deebo Samuel. So it just is the screen good versus cover three? Yeah, but is it great versus man? Absolutely. And so the setup really puts them in a position where you get Deebo in space one-on-one with a player who's kind of like, you know, way deep in the way away from the line of scrimmage, and he obviously, you know, puts the hurting on that guy. But I just thought, like, from a play calling standpoint, from when the plays were called and the types of plays that were called, I thought he had a really good understanding of what Eberflus wanted to do and wanted to be, and I think it shows, right? And I think, again, like, the play volume number is so interesting to me because I think it shows a couple things about, like, healthy offense. One, it shows, like, the importance of explosive plays, right? They're in this game, and the time of possession is so skewed. The number of plays run is so skewed. And really, to me, maybe the most important metric in football is explosive plays, like, for offensive production, right? If you find a bunch of explosive chunks, you're going to have an opportunity to win the football game, right? So the other thing I would point out, though, is it also shows the shortcomings of that philosophy. And so, like, the other metric I'd look at is, like, their third down percentage, right? And it's been kind of the issue for them all season is, like, in these critical high leverage moments, like, they can't seem to convert on third down. And the one that comes to mind is that third and one after the missed field goal in the fourth quarter where they're driving down to go score. They get a, you know, they have a 9-yard run by Bill Kroski Merritt. It's second and one, and they don't end up getting a first down on that sequence. So I look at that stuff and I'm saying, like, yeah, the explosive plays were awesome. I thought Deebo had his best game maybe since the Chargers game. I mean, would you agree with that, Grant? Like, that's kind of the last time was
I thought utilized that one. In the first half, he was on his way to his best game of the year and kind of settled in. But yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, 100%. So, and again, just like the lack, for whatever reason, the lack of of that consistency on third down, I thought raised its head again today for whatever reason. But again, like, to your point, you know, with a third string quarterback, a bunch of young guys playing a lot of football, like, this was this exceeded all expectations for me in terms of what I thought the offense would be capable of on Sunday.
We'll talk more about this when we break down the defense next segment, but you referenced third downs just to give those numbers. Washington was 1 of 6, 17%. Dallas converted 8 third downs, 8 for 20, but they were 6 for 6 on fourth down. So really that's like 14 for 20 when you get them to third down that they stay on the field, which is why you end up seeing that play discrepancy, you know, that we're talking about. On Cliff here, the screen catching him in the right look is obviously called, and that's on him. How much of that is Josh Johnson, though, as a veteran? There was so much consternation this week about, you know, playing Sam Hartman, and I still think getting young guys at this time of year a chance, like, what else is the point of them? Having said that, like, when you talk about, okay, they're running this in the middle of the field, they're kind of, this is muddy, so let's just throw this out real quick, get it out of my hand. Like, that's a veteran quarterback knowing where to go with the ball. How do you divvy up the credit there between Cliff hitting them with the right calls and Johnson kind of reading it out? And how do you see that?
Well, I definitely think – so a couple things here. One, I think the defense that they're playing against is, you know, is not a good defense, the Dallas defense at this point, right? They get into simple looks. They kind of play like traditional spot drop zones, and the last couple teams they've struggled with play like these aggressive match coverages. So this is a little bit of an easier out. And I think – understanding what they're going to do, I think I give a lot of credit to Cliff, but also Josh Johnson. Like, I think it's like almost equal in terms of who gets the credit. Obviously, Cliff's calling the plays, he's designing the offense, so I think you probably got to give him a little bit more credit. But I think when you look at Josh Johnson's performance, like, he does a lot of really good stuff. Like, there's a play like where he starts on the offensive right. It's three by one. He's kind of working through his progression. It's not there. He whips back and rips the comeback to Terry, which is pretty fantastic. So I just think, again, for Josh to come out and do what he did. And again, I think the other thing too is, like, this is the type of game when you have a backup quarterback that you need to call, to Cliff's credit, right? You need to get, you know, like, here's a reverse, here's a double pass, here's, you know, you get an explosive run, like, a, what was it, 74-yard run. That's awesome. You get an explosive play off a screen. Like, those are not high leverage throws. So you're not saying, hey, Josh Johnson, go back there and absolutely deal. It's like elements of your offense are hitting in a way, like, kind of that. Remember we talked to, I don't know if I've talked to you about this before, but one of the things that Kyle used to say to me all the time, or say to the offense all the time, was we need to find 5 to 6 explosive plays. And I thought Cliff did a great job of finding 5 to 6 explosive plays, right? The screen, the reverse, the long run, there's a outside zone run in the red zone, which ends up being 15, which I would characterize as explosive. So, like, they found them. And I think it deleveraged Josh Johnson. But when Josh Johnson had to make a play, I feel like he did a great job with it.
Yeah, I thought he played at a level that answers some questions as to how is a guy like Josh Johnson stay in the league as long as he has? You know, how has he played on as many teams as he has? This guy's 39. He'll turn 40 in May. He's been with Tampa, Cleveland, Cincy, Washington multiple times, the Jets, the Ravens, the 49ers, just to name. If those are just the teams where he's gotten on the field. He's also been in the AFL and the UFL and the XFL and the everything FL. And here he is, like, generally getting these chances. You feel bad for him, like, at the very end of these lost seasons. I think the teams are 1-9 in the games he starts or whatever, because it's like this, right? You're like, all right, it's Josh's turn. But he's a survivor, man. And I thought he was immensely sharp. I thought he was accurate. The play you referenced,
yeah,
that
I think
I loved,
that's the thing. Yeah, the accuracy.
I love that the comeback to Terry, because they showed this replay from behind, almost like an all 22 look, but it was like from behind the quarterback in the end zone, and you could see him, like, process it so quickly. Like, there's been this big debate in football. Cousins did this like multi-minute thing. I think I sent it to you about, yeah, like, mm-hmm, how he reads things out, but you could see Josh process, like, going like 1, 2, 3. And it was, yeah, like as quickly as you could look across a formation, and then he's putting a ball right on the chest of Terry McLaurin. Like, that's big league stuff for a third quarterback. I mean, Hartman's just not able to do that. And I don't want to keep harping on that, but my point is, like, this guy looked like an NFL quarterback, and whenever he's gotten chances in his career, this is mostly what it's looked like.
No, dude, I think that's right. I think that's the thing. It's like, because there are times, I think, like, last week we saw him struggle a little bit versus Philadelphia. And this week, with a full week of practice, having an opportunity to, you know, take all the reps, he just looked like a guy that belonged. And if you're the third guy on a team and you come out and you look that way, like, that is a win, bro. That is a win 100 out of 100 times. And so the other thing that stood out to me is, like you mentioned, like, it was like one of the first plays of the game. Like, they're trying to hit what I'd say, like a bench route, like a big out route to Terry, and it's not there. And he just immediately kind of snaps his shoulders back and throws a dig to Debo for another explosive off a play action pass setup. And so, again, like, were there a ton of like these, oh my gosh, like, this is really, you know, high level, impossible throw? No. But when he had to do it, I think he was able to do it. And that's the cool thing. And in a weird way, it kind of reminded me of some of Jaden Daniels' performances last year, where it's like, I'm just taking what the defense is giving me. And then here are four opportunities in a game where I have to do something that is exceptional. And I think that's like, that's exactly what he did. And so again, testament to Cliff, testament to Josh. And again, for him to look this way, I think, again, I go back to Cliff and understanding what the player knows and what the player understands and really getting him ready to go. Because I've seen Josh over the course of his career, which is a career that is fantastic and super impressive in its own way, struggle in games where he's had to come in. And here I just felt like he was really prepared. He knew exactly what the Dallas Cowboys were going to do on Christmas Day and executed at a really high level.
Yeah, if that exact performance was Jaden, we're not sitting here raving about it. But I would say they didn't ask him to do a ton, but he was pretty accurate. If it was Mariota, I would have felt pretty good. Because it was a third quarterback, I mean, I kind of watched that. Like, look around when third quarterbacks play. Like, look at Max Brosmer or whatever yesterday for the Vikings. They had like four net passing yards. Like, when you get down the depth chart like that, it's normally a really, really ugly, gross passing game. So for him to come out and go 15 of 23, make the right reads, be decisive, throw for about 200 yards, hit some explosives, was a big deal. This is a little off the beaten path because we don't care that much about the Cowboys, but frankly, I care about the lack of health of that defense because I want it to continue. How much of their problem, because watching this game, you kind of are like, man, they are easy to move the ball against right now. Like, it felt a little bit like Washington at its worst or when things weren't as good, where it's like stuff's open middle of the field, the out routes and the screens are hitting for big plays. Like, is it an Eberflus problem or is it a personnel problem or both? Like, do you think Eberflus is back with them next year?
Yeah, I think that's the thing that after watching the game and after watching some of their games earlier this season, I do think there needs to be an evolution of what he's doing personally, you know. And so, like, whether he's back or not, I can't speak to that. I don't know how he's received in the building. But, you know, one of the things, like, when, like, just because I watch this defense every week, I break it down, I talk to Fletch, Smoot, Sean Springs, like, these guys are smart dudes. And, you know, like, when this defense is at its worst, like, that's what the Dallas Cowboys defense was doing the other day. Like, I mentioned the spot drop issue, right? Like, and I think this goes back to the Kirk Cousins video you sent. Like, so this is going to be a long story to get to a point here. So I went to tight end university a couple years ago, and Dallas Clark, who's one of like my favorite players of all time, did a presentation. And so he got up there and he's like, hey man, like, this is cover three, this is cover two, this is how I run my seam versus cover two, this is how I run my seam versus cover three. And I was sitting there watching the film, and this was probably 5 years ago now. And I was watching the film and I was like, no team in the NFL plays cover three like that anymore. They just don't. It's just like exactly like you would draw it on paper. I have this third, you have this third. They don't do it that way anymore. It's this really complicated match. They're kind of, everyone says like, we're matching hot spots, we're matching route concepts. And when you watch good teams, it's like, yeah, that's quarters, but it looks and kind of feels like man coverage because it condenses the picture so much. And so yesterday, or on Thursday, on Christmas, versus the Cowboys, you're like, why do we consistently have free access, hitch access over here? You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, that's because we're spot dropping like cover three. Like, that's how you would do it. That's
They're
how
doing
when
the
I
Dallas
played.
Clark thing.
Yeah, like that's how they did it when I was playing and when Dallas Clark did it, right? It's like, we're going to get out of here, I'm going to hit the out every single time. And his defensive philosophy is that it's 100% bend but don't break. That's what it's been since he's been in the NFL, right? We're going to keep everything in front, we're going to tackle well. And so when you don't do those things well defensively, when you don't tackle well, when you don't rally to the football, this kind of softer, more traditional coverage shell, it just doesn't work because you give up a 74-yard touchdown run. You give up a big play on a screen and man-to-man coverage, right? You all of these things kind of stack on top of itself, and you just – it's not good ball. And so I think that's what I'd say is, like, I think he needs to either – kind of go back to the drawing board and kind of change and make the defense a little bit more aggressive from a coverage standpoint. Or you say to yourself, like, we got to get back to the fundamentals that make this defense work, which is tackling well in space, you know, understanding kind of the limitations of the defense, where teams are going to try to attack us. And again, it's his first year there. So there are kind of pitfalls to installing a defense like that. But I think that's what I'd say is, like, it is a very traditional defense in that way.
Grant Paulson, Logan Paulson, take command. All right, we're not done with the offense. I still got some things I want to get, including Bill hitting a home run. So we'll do that as soon as we return on Take Command.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Reign. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Take Command with Logan Paulson. I'm Grant Paulson. We've been talking about Washington's offense against the Dallas Cowboys as Logan broke down the tape and we're reviewing the ball game. We'll get to the defense in just a bit, and then I want to look ahead to the end of the season and some bigger picture things because, frankly, at 4-11 now, you know, 4-12, that's kind of where we are in this season. But, Logan, let's get to the explosives themselves. You had a 72-yard touchdown run by Bill. You had a 41-yard Johnson pass to Deebo Samuel where he's pushed out of bounds. That was on the screen. You had a 30-yarder. That was Johnson to Chris Moore. Pretty nice play, but get down down the field. It was 15 yards and then, you know, tack on 15. You had the 29-yarder Samuel to Deebo again on the Deebo. I should say that was on the Deebo run. And then you had the 27-yarder Josh Johnson middle of the field on like a – you know, throw to Deebo. By the way, early in this game, you said, was this his best, you know, half or whatever? God, Deebo was great. He looked healthier. Like that explosiveness, I'm not trying to turn this into a negative, but like we did not see that most of the year. This was very early season Deebo Samuel. He just looked like a man possessed.
Yeah, I brought that up on the postgame show with Santana B. Mitch. And Tana's instantly like, man, I think he's healthy. And Tana, man, he's an awesome dude. He's like the best guy. And he has this uncanny ability to tell you if a dude's hurt. he should get into like horse betting or something like that. Cause I mean, he just has this, like this crazy, like we'll go out and watch practice. He's like, man, he ain't right. And I swear to you, the next day that dude will be on the injury report. And it's like 100 for 100. Wow. And so like, he'll go out and watch practice or watch warmups even and be like, yeah, I don't think he's feeling it today. And like, and again, Tana goes out and this is the first time I think he's been healthy. So Tana's like my, you know, like my barometer for the health of a player. I don't know what he's looking at exactly, but he's got a great feel for it. And he's like, yeah, I think this is the first time in a while that he's felt like himself and been a part of the game plan and executed at a high level.
Does this only work for football, or can I stand in front of Tana and he could tell me like, hey, your liver needs to be looked at. Let's make sure your kidneys are functioning correctly.
It usually has to do with people running, but we can give it a shot. You know what I mean? We can throw you out there, see what he comes up with. You know what I mean?
My guess is if he sees me running, he's going to think I ain't right. That's probably my guess, but I can't be for sure. But yeah, I just thought the way they used him was really good. Like, the other thing about this too is on the Debo run, there's space. On the screen, they get him at the perfect time and he gets going downhill. The difference between Debo on plays where like he can get the engine revved up, I don't have a better way to put it, but it's like the 18-wheeler coming downhill. Like, once he starts going, get out of the way. And there were just more of those plays. You could kind of tell 5 yards into a Debo play, could this be a big one, or is this kind of dead in the water? Because he's not like twitchy. He's not going to make you miss, really. You know, this is like a guy that's going to run through contact. And they just had, right. I thought that he had more fortuitous kind of looks early than he typically does, too.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think the screen's a great example. So they've tried to been getting him on screens all season, and they've been kind of running these traditional, what I would call, like we've talked about it before, slammer screens, right? Where it's like, hey, you're going to step up once, to take one step up, you're going to come back to the football, the offensive line's going to release. Yeah, so the pursuit to the football in those plays has been really high level. And so I've always been like, man, it feels a little bit stagnant. It feels like you can really see when they're trying to get to the screen. And so I actually thought the setup on this screen was like chef's kiss, right? So you got run action away, you fake the toss, you bring motion across the formation with Treylon Burks, and they're in man coverage. Everyone's running to the ball, running over here, and then for him to kind of get this set up to the perimeter and then kind of run the slammer screen back the other way, I thought it was great. And so again, like the way they designed some of these opportunities, I thought were really, really good. The reverse, the way it hit, the way you got a block from Terry, and the way they kind of played through the block. So Terry's got to crack the first linebacker off the ball in the box. That guy blitzes. Terry does a great job kind of staying on track, getting a hat on a hat in terms of the guy running downhill. Conley does a great job getting up to the second level. So does Biadasz. And Ben Sinnott absolutely murders the guy in the perimeter. So you got great execution versus multiple looks. And also, I do think they took advantage of some of the limitations of this defense. And one of the things about this defense that's come up week on week is their linebackers specifically have terrible eyes outside of Overshown, who didn't play, right? They are just like dogs to a ball. Like, there's no like conception of like, hey, I need to maybe slow play this, or I need to maybe like wait till the quarterback actually hands the football off before I start running in pursuit. And again, I think that they, one of the things we talked about is like taking advantage of the second level of this defense. I thought they did a great job of that. And I think that like the screen is a great example of that. The play action pass shot to Debo, like those linebackers, Grant, are within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. So it's like, oh, the corner's not there, let me throw this big dig. And there's nobody in the shot except for the guy that's trying to match him outside in from the cornerback spot. So I think Cliff like understood the assignment, understood where this defense was weak. You see it when the play design on the screen, you see it in the play design on the reverse, you see it in the play design on the play action. And again, you're able to find some of these explosive opportunities that really speak to Debo Samuel's skill set.
It's funny, as you're talking, I'm thinking about Cliff. I find grading his season so complicated because there have been some weeks like this where I'm blown away and really impressed. There's some weeks where maybe it's the opposite, where you're like frustrated with how it looks. And you're like, hey, let's try this. Let's do this. But also, he's dealt with so many injuries. I mean, there's so many man games missed. It's insane, right? So I wonder, like I go back and forth all the time on this, but I think that it's very possible that he still gets head coaching interviews. I know that everyone seems to think that like the bloom is off the rose in that regard this year, but look around. Like, there's not OCs that are hot candidates, really. Clint Kubiak is one guy that's going to get a head coaching job. Outside of him, I think you're hard-pressed to find coordinators, play callers who are definitively better candidates right now, or hotter candidates than like Cliff Kingsbury would be. And that's not to say he's had some banner season. The numbers are going to be the numbers, but What do you think the interest is going to be? Would you be surprised if he got interviews off of some of the tape and how this year went?
No, and it's for the reason you just said, like the fact that like right now in the coaching cycle, obviously The Athletic puts out like a hot coaching candidate list every single year. And all those guys are defensive coordinators, right? And it makes sense because like right now defense is kind of making a pushback. There's been a little bit of an offensive drain brain, like all those guys moving into head coaching roles. And so again, I think probably next year there's going to be an influx or surge of offensive coaches. But I think like you've talked about, like if Grant Paulson was a GM, he would want an offensive coordinator to be the head coach, right? Because the offense is like the driver of the team, right? So get that guy to stay in the building. So I'm sure there's other GMs, other ownership groups that have similar philosophies and want an offensive play caller. And so in this year, which is a little bit down, like you look down the short list, you're like, who would it possibly be? And I don't know if there's anybody else outside of Clint Kubiak, obviously, and Cliff are guys that are going to get opportunities in maybe years where if the class was a little bit, it kind of reminds me of draft classes, right? You're like, this guy is not really like a first round player necessarily, but someone's got to get drafted in the first round. So it might as well be this guy. And I think Cliff has handled a lot of adversity this season, right? He's handled a lot of injury, a lot of, adversity at the quarterback spot. He's had like the receiver thing, like in it, like the losing Austin Eckler, like there's a ton of adversity here. So I think if I'm a GM, I look at men, I say last year was one of the best offensive performances I've ever seen by a rookie. This year, he kind of was the mad scientist in terms of piecing things together. I think there's definitely an argument to making sure that he's the guy that stays, that is the forefront leader of our organization. And again, like when you meet Cliff, the charisma is undeniable. And I think that's another part of being a head coach that people often sleep on, right? Is they say, oh, like, this guy's really, really smart, but also like, how is he with people? And my experience is Cliff is excellent in that regard. So I just look at all those things and say like, why not? And so in a down year for offensive coaches, I think he definitely would, I definitely would give him a look and see definitely an interview. And that doesn't mean I'm going to hire him, but I definitely give him an interview and see like how that opportunity looks for him and for my organization.
Yeah. And I think people that listen to the pod all the time, know that like I have some frustrations with like how the offense operates in terms of that, like structure. And but here's the thing, like he's really good and he does his thing his way. And it's a season, I think, when you look from a 10,000 foot view, that's going to look a whole lot better than when you're just kind of staring at it up close,
right?
From 2 inches away at the art museum, too. Like you said, there's context to this where you got a third string quarterback out there and a bunch of dudes missing, and you're going up and down the field at 8 yards per play yesterday. Like, you know what a lot of offenses look like yesterday when that's happened? It's 196 yards and 4.1 per play. Like, he was able to make some filet mignon out of some hamburger helper here. The other thing real quick on Cliff, and we're off the beaten path, but I did want to bring this up because I realize I haven't mentioned this. It's something I've thought for a while. I think he's going to be a way better head coach the second time, having been around Dan Quinn. And what I mean by that is, like, if you think about it, so Cliff got his head coaching job in Arizona having never been really like a coach or a coordinator in an NFL building, which is not to say that you can't get some of this in college. But he was like quality control at Houston, where he became a quarterbacks coach and the co-OC, and then he became the OC at Texas A&M before the head coach at Texas Tech. But he, in an NFL building with a guy leading, grown men like Dan Quinn does, which is, I think, his greatest strength, like that ability to just – kind of turn the hat backwards and give the speech and do the awesome stuff in the room. Like, just being around that and seeing the, I'll use my brotherhood bell here, ding. Like, whatever that is, I think anyone's going to be a lot better for having been around that. And the fact that Cliff got a head job having never been an assistant in an NFL building is pretty rare, honestly. And it's hard. And I just wonder how much better he's going to be. I've heard him talk about this a little bit. But I just think he's going to be a way better head coach the second time around.
Yeah, and the story that comes to mind is when I played in San Francisco in 2017 with Kyle, and he was talking kind of to the group, and I just kind of was like, hey, man, like, what informed this decision? He was like, no hesitation, Dan Quinn, right? Like, my time with Dan Quinn changed my perspective on how a locker room should run. And, no one's going to work harder than Kyle. No one's going to make the team work harder than Kyle. But I think the other thing he said to me is, like, Dan showed me the importance of making sure that it's fun, right? Like, when we got to grind, but like, it can be fun to be in the building and encourage guys to be around and encouraging like each other to support each other. And again, like I really like had a awesome time with Mike when I was here. Like Mike is like you know, all-time great in Logan Paulson's book because he gave me the shot. But to see like how that environment, which was very player friendly, kind of changed to even when Kyle took over in 2017 in San Francisco, it was really cool to see, right? It was kind of the same thing, but they'd kind of like when you're with an offense and it kind of evolves a little bit over the course of time because you're impacted by all these other people. And the environment was like so much more playful, so much more jovial. And again, like we worked our tails off in San Fran, and anybody who goes up to San Fran talks about how hard they work, but it was a lot of fun. And I do think like that's one thing that Dan, for whatever reason, just brings wherever he goes. And every coach that, you know, like, you know, Mike McDaniels, like was with a Matt LaFleur, like they've carried some of that environmental element. And I would 100% agree that I think Cliff would be, I think he's a bright dude. I think he's a hard worker. And I think understanding the interpersonal relationships that are required to run an NFL team, like, I don't know if you're going to get a better masterclass than what Dan Quinn does, to your point. So I think it's fantastic. And again, like, I don't want Cliff to go, but I think he's a very talented person. And I think like talented people get interviews and they get opportunities. And we're talking about his growth cycle here. And I think being around Dan is definitely going to help him be a better head coach whenever he chooses to take that opportunity.
If I had to guess, I'd say he'll be back because it might not be the perfect situation. And you would have another year to work with Daniels, and maybe thinking with an off season ahead, you have a big year of offense, you'd be in a good spot again next year. But I just think this idea that he's not going to get an interview, which is somehow kind of trickling all over the place, I'm like, I'm not so sure about that. I don't think this year has been the net negative that everybody kind of assumes for his coaching resume. Getting back into the game against the Cowboys, something I wanted to hit on and jotted down here. I mean, we got the Bill home run that we knew he had the ability to rip off. Like, this was a club that's been in that bag. It's my biggest argument for more touches for him and why I love him. I think there was a time on the pod where I said something that aged very poorly, where I was like, I have not felt this good about a running back with the ball in his hands here since Clinton Portis. And yesterday with Clinton Portis on the broadcast for some reason on Netflix, in that moment on Zoom, and I love CP, but like they're interviewing him in the middle of this game. He's sitting there in like Miami on his back deck. Bill rips off a 72-yard touchdown reminiscent of the 64-yarder for Portis against the Bucks on his first ever carry in Washington that brought a young me to my feet. But 11 for 105, a 9.5 average, two touchdowns, and another really nice touchdown run in this game where Bill made a nice cut, made a guy miss, and rips off a 10-yard touchdown. This was the guy we fell in love with in training camp, Logan.
Yeah, and again, like, it's you know, like the talent he has, undeniable, right? Like, I mean, I think you saw it from day one at training camp. I mean, you saw it from him at college, like watching the old New Mexico stuff, watching the one game that he played at the, you know, at Arizona, and watching, and obviously getting the reports from the Shrine Bowl. Like, he's a special talent. And I do think, like, there are some, even with special talents, there are some growing pains associated with being a rookie in the NFL. And I think we got to see and experience some of that. There was some protection stuff. There's some, you know, not being patient on runs. And again, like, that's all part of the growing pains of becoming an NFL starter. But it was awesome to see. Awesome to see that little outside zone hit. And, you know, I knew he was fast, Grant, like obviously very explosive. Like when you look at his acceleration, deceleration numbers, like they're top shelf, like 1% of very freaky athletes in the NFL. But I wasn't sure about his long speed. And again, he ran a, you know, 4.5, which isn't slow, but it's not blazing fast. And he kind of walked off on a very fast secondary for the Dallas Cowboys. And so to me, I was like, that's even more impressive than, you know, what I was anticipating from him. And again, like, no run can be talked about without talking about the blocking surface, right? You get a great job by Wiley reaching the three technique. Biotish climbs to the second level. Connerly to the second level. Bates does just enough on the crash nine to kind of create a little bit of width. Traylon Burks is blocking the safety. And Bill Kroski Merritt makes the corner miss. And that's exactly what you want. And then he lets kind of his God-given ability take over, and he just outruns the defense. And so, to your point, talking about Clinton Portis and the home run ability and all these different things, like, that's what you're looking for. I think that's when they draft him in the seventh round. Like, that's what they're betting on, that upside play of his athleticism and what that brings to the offense. And one of the things we talked about in the offseason with building an offense is finding more explosive opportunities. And you will not find a bigger Chris Rodriguez supporter than me. Like, I love the way he runs. I love his approach. I love his story. Like, I put on C-Rod pajamas when I go to bed at night, right? But there's something about having a back that can hit a home run like that, that changes the dynamic of your offense. So on these, you know, what do you have, 11 carries? Like having that kind of, you know, the opportunity to hit blackjack at some point where he says, oh, we got a crease, I'm going to hit a home run here. Like that is something that is very, very valuable to an offense that is hunting for explosive plays. So I look at a building block moving forward. I say, man, Bill Krosky Merritt is at 100% because of this ability to kind of take it to the house and make this offense that much more dynamic.
So for me, this is kind of how I'm going to make this make sense. He gets through the line of scrimmage and into the second level, and he's got a full head of steam, and you're going, oh, he got one. Like, finally, Bill ripped off an explosive. But even in that moment, I don't think there's any chance he's going to score. I mean, 72 yards, I'm thinking top of my head, Adrian Peterson had a 90-yard touchdown run here. Going back to like almost a decade ago now. And that was on a little bit of a broken play where, you know, they had everybody at the line of scrimmage. He breaks through with speed and no one's catching him. I could think of the Robert Griffin touchdown run, I think was 76 yards against the Vikings, which you were on the field for. You know, that's a near 80-yard play. But, I mean, 72 in the run game doesn't happen. And from a running back, on a play like that where it's not like a busted, like, thing at the line of scrimmage, or like you run into a wall, nobody tackles you, and you come out like Jeremy McNichols did for that 60-yarder or whatever. So I'm so trained to he's going to get caught or he's going to get angled out because they just haven't had anyone on this team literally in forever who could score on that play. And he keeps running and he keeps running. And I'm like, oh my God, it's going to happen. Just felt like he did the impossible because they have not had someone who could hit the ball over the fence. And this is the argument for Bill to me, is that he can hit the home run. I love Chris Rodriguez, battering ram. There's a role for him. But the Bill ceiling is so much higher because of that play.
No, I think that's 100% right. And again, that's something to be optimistic about. And like, can he get more involved in the pass game? We've seen what he can do touching the football against like the Chargers on those screens,
right?
Some of those perimeter runs. It's like, he's very talented. It's just about the consistency with him. And again, like, that's not to say he's been, you know, messing around or goofing off. Like there is a learning curve when it comes to the NFL in terms of what an NFL run is, you know? And I think like when you get the taste of an explosive, it's like, oh man, I want to do that all the time. But good NFL runners are okay just hitting singles. They hit singles until they get their perfect pitch and they knock that thing out of the park. And I think like that's hopefully what we're seeing from him now. And this, you know, people talk about these games being meaningless. Like, I think for the team, maybe for the record, for the playoffs, like maybe meaningless is an appropriate way to describe it. But for this player, these reps are extremely important. Like, I look at him, I look at guys like Ben Sinnott, I look at guys like Brandon Coleman. I say, man, like they are getting better before our eyes. Like they're developing so much each week because of this experience. And so to see a guy like Bill Krosky Merritt, and again, like the blocking surface here is fantastic. Let me just reiterate, like it is really, really good. But when it's really, really good, like think about any Jahmyr Gibbs run you've seen this year that's over 50 yards. Like the blocking surface is excellent. It's when you get that perfect blocking surface, do you have a back or a player that can make you right? It's the same thing that happened on the Deebo Samuel reverse. Like there's a bunch of people you can have run reverse, right? But when you get that perfectly blocked structure and you get this, you get Deebo one-on-one with the safety, is do you have a person on your roster that's capable of making that guy miss? Obviously, Deebo did it. And obviously, Bill Krosky Merritt has the explosive juice to take that thing. What is it, 74 yards, you say?
72.
Like 70, yeah, 72, I mean, for
that's
a touchdown.
The thing. Like, I'm not trying to knock him, but like, and I have to look at the actual play for the number. But like with B-Rob, you get that perfect surface and it's like a 29-yard gain or whatever. You know what
which
I'm saying?
Which is great, which is fine.
Which is awesome. It's a win. Like everybody won. But this is the next level of that where you kind of take the lid off and now you've got the ability to go score from 70. And it's just you've got added range. You can hit the three from the NBA range. You can step back toward the timeline, Steph Curry.
It reminds me of the run that C-Rod had against Atlanta, which is that counter, right? I think it was like the first quarter, the running counter.
Yep.
And C-Rod does a great job, man. He breaks the tackle, hits that thing.
40-yard play.
But in the open space, like, I think Bill might take that to the house. And that's just the difference, right? It's just like they're both good runners. And I think like David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs, like they're both good runners. They both bring different elements of what it means to be a running back. But I can't tell you, like when I'm watching Jahmyr Gibbs versus Tampa Bay and they get that duo blocked up perfectly, and there's a little bit of crease, and he's one-on-one with the safety. I'm like, that's six, man. And they're 75 yards away from the end zone. And so having a dude like that, and again, I'm not comparing him to Jahmyr Gibbs because Jahmyr Gibbs is the pinnacle of this archetype. But I mean, this dude is, I think, has that ability, and it's cool to see. And it's going to be cool to see him continue to develop.
And he got a lot of that work because Chris Rodriguez was sick and unavailable. I feel for him because two of the last 3 weeks in some pretty ideal situations, honestly, in terms of the Giants and the Cowboys, the matchups, he hasn't been able to go. But you got to be on the field to be getting the work. Like, you're talking about him getting better, Ben Sinnott getting better. You know, I got what I wanted with Ben Sinnott. Four targets, three catches, almost 40 yards. It finally happened. But, like, you got to give these guys the opportunity. We'll get to Sinnott in a second. One more on the running backs thing. Where are you at going into next year on that room? And I'll preface it with this. I was asked this on the Sports Junkies on 106.7 The Fan this morning on a hit I was doing. They're like, how big of a priority do you make running back? And this is one of the few areas on the team, and it's almost by default because I think they need so many other things.
Yeah.
Where I actually feel okay. Now, I think you probably – like, McNichols has had a really good year. Could you bring him back at almost 30 on a one-year deal? Sure. Have him compete in camp, whatever. I think ideally for me, I'm always looking to get faster everywhere. There's no doubt about that. But I would like an Eckler-type player brought in to be their third-down pass catcher, and maybe like Eckler last year. If that guy's super effective, he gets first and second-down work as well, maybe bites into the work share a little bit. But I would have it no problem if the first and second down plan is Bill and Rodriguez again. Like, I don't think that's cost them. I think both of those guys could get a little better, and especially Bill. I think they're plenty good enough there that if they had a, you know, a McNichols replacement with a little more ceiling, especially, that would be kind of the movement in the room that I would need to feel good. There's just so many other things to get done. Where are you at on that? Do you disagree?
No, I think you're probably pretty close to being right there. My philosophy, though, is like with a room like that, if you can find a guy at the right price that does something for you, like, definitely bring him in. And so, is that my number one priority this offseason is finding another back for the running back room? No. But if I'm Adam Peters, like, I'm kicking the tires on some guys, maybe some older veterans, not older veterans, but, you know, kind of middle of the road veterans, year four or five guys that have played a little bit in the league, that have a skill set that I like, bring them in, man. It's a 90-man roster. Like, it's basically a long tryout for this offseason, OTAs, minicamp, training camp. Let's get another body in here. And so I'm not saying draft the running back from Notre Dame in the first round at six or wherever they're picking. I'm not saying that because I think that would be a gross misallocation of resources. But in free agency, there's going to be a guy bumping up and down on a practice squad somewhere. Like, think about McNichols. Like, think about that find for this team. Like, there's another body out there. Let's make sure we bring someone in and make sure that it's a competitive environment. I will say that's an important part of team building also, is just making sure that nobody is kind of resting on their laurels. Let's always make sure it's competitive. Let's push guys to get better. And so that's kind of how I'd handle the running back room.
All right, real quick, Ben Sinnott. I've been asking for a handful of targets and a few catches, and we got four targets, three catches, 39 yards. What'd you think? What'd you see?
Yeah, and again, they're not like crazy targets. It's basically like he's running a bunch of stick or what I would call Patriot concept, right, where you get a, you know, 5 yard out, box fade, and then a hitch on the outside, and they're running Tampa 2 in a 2 minute situation, so that's where the ball should go. And old Logan Paulson has caught a couple of those, padding the stats a little bit in 2 minute situations. But I think it's great because it's an opportunity for them to get some film. Like, one of the first kind of little stick routes that he catches, he kind of does like a little, you know, takes a false step, kind of loops around. Like, as he gets better, he's going to catch that football, drop step that thing, and turn that into a 10 yard gain as opposed to a 6 yard gain or whatever it is. So I think it's great for him to get these moments, these experiences. Like, he's in the red zone, right? You know, where Josh Johnson takes the sack and he's working the pick route to, for Treylon Burks, and obviously Josh works the other side, but like, just to get those reps banked for him, I think is extremely important. Like, we had another really good seam. Like, Josh throws it to Terry, or he's trying to look for Terry, but Ben does a great job of pushing for a little bit of width, getting the guy to widen, slipping underneath. And I think that's all these reps for Ben. He strikes me as a guy that learns by doing, like, and it's very hard to find a guy who learns by not doing. He kind of learns on the whiteboard. But every week, I just see him kind of maturing as a route runner, maturing and understanding the spacing and getting more confident. And one of the things that I had a hard time with earlier in the season was, like, I just felt like he was always in the biggest rush on his routes. And you're like, man, like, be patient. And you're starting to see shades of that patience come through. We talked about it in the New York Giants game. Obviously here in this game, there's a little bit of him being patient in terms of how he's running routes. And I think that's so awesome because, again, with Zach's injury, like, there's going to be a space here on this team. And I'm not, and again, much like the running back room, I'm not saying like just anoint Ben as the guy that's going to get that opportunity. But I think he's developing a really solid foundation where, like, if this guy has to play a ton for us next year, it's not like, oh no, it's like, okay, yeah, let's see what Ben's got. And like, maybe with a good offseason, he earns more of these opportunities. But this to me is such a foundational element of him having an excellent offseason moving into 2026.
Yeah, the game is certainly slowing down for him at this point. All right, we're going to get to the defensive side of the ball, and we're doing kind of mixing in some offseason discussion as well, as we should be, frankly, in week 17 of this 18-week slate. Hopefully everybody had a Merry Christmas. It's Take Command. We'll wrap things up next.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
Welcome back to Take Command. Logan Paulson played a decade in the NFL. I'm Grant Paulson. You can listen to me on 106.7 The Fan every day from 2 to 6.30. Logan, how did you guys work Christmas morning? You've got two kids at home, so did you guys do like first thing in the morning, open presents, and then you're off to the stadium, or did you do a Christmas Eve thing? What'd you do?
So we did Christmas on the 24th, like basically all day we did a Christmas. So, you know, like we got – my wife and I got them presents. So we did that in the morning from like, you know, 9 to 12. And then the next morning, my in-laws came over while I was at the stadium and they did presents there. So my kids have had like three Christmases and my parents are sending stuff. So they're going to have a fourth Christmas here pretty soon. So my kids are really spoiled, unfortunately. So we got to deal with that. But Christmas was fantastic. It worked out really, really well. How'd you do it? You stayed at home, right?
We did great. So yeah, so we were traveling a bit. Not bad, but a couple hour drive like each direction. So with that, it just would have been too hard to get to the stadium. So what time do you think my 4-year-old woke me up on Christmas morning?
Oh my God. I'm going to say 5:50.
That's a great guess. We're looking for 4:28. 4:28 a.m. Right as Cliff Kingsbury was, you know, driving to the office or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, turning on his computer when he's the only person in Ashburn. I've seen those Hard Knocks clips. But yeah, man, 4:30 in the morning. And I told him, I said, buddy, he was so excited. Santa came. I said, that's awesome. That's really good. I said, but here's the deal. We're not opening anything before, you know, 7. It ended up being, we got him to 6:30. So that's when we started tearing open the presents. But like he would go downstairs. He would come back up. Dad, you got pretzels. And I'm like, dude, that's awesome. Like, I love pretzels.
And but
he, yeah.
You know what I don't love is you telling me about it at 4:30 in the morning.
Sitting on me, you know, like knee in the, you know what, like on my bed, you know. And then he's like, dad. I'm like, yeah, bud. It's like 4:51. He's like, I could see that I got a soccer ball. And I'm like, dude. Yes, I
great.
Love that.
Yeah, I love that for you. Yeah,
this is perfect. Also, it's 4:51. Anyway, so yeah, we crushed it overall. The kids, Santa took care of the kids, but yeah. So then we went to the her aunt and uncle's house. We do this huge themed Christmas every year. This year was Circus Christmas.
Okay,
dude, you've got to look at my Instagram to see how wild this was.
Okay. I'll do that when we get off.
Yeah. Hall of Fame. Unbelievable. So her aunt puts, I'm not joking, months of decoration and work into this. It's like whatever you're expecting to see when you fire up my Instagram. It's going to be bigger than that, just so you know. So like we've done all kinds of themes, Grinch and Woodlands and Ski Lodge. But this year was Circus Christmas, so the kids love that. But yeah, so it's been good, man. Enjoyed ourselves. Let's get into the Commanders defense, though, before we say goodbye for week 17 and the game breakdown. Where do you want to start? Look, early on, it was a real problem. What adjustments were made maybe after they gave up the 21 midway through the second? They'd given up the 86-yard touchdown, which I want to go through that play in a moment. They gave up the two long drives, 78 yards where Ferguson catches the 6-yarder, and then about 70 yards where Williams, who got hurt. Incidentally, both those guys left the game with injuries and didn't come back. The early touchdown scores, which helped the cause, I guess. But they were down 21-3. Did you see any schematic adjustment after that to clean things up?
Not really. What I will say is this is going to sound crazy because I gave up 30 points, but I actually thought the defense did a really good job on first and second down. I think the run fits are better. The coverage principles are better. And I think the thing that really jumps to the forefront in terms of like what the issue was is just third down and fourth down efficiency in this game is really what it comes down to. And I think if you want to kind of tack something onto that, it's second and long defending the runs. And so like I look at some of the stuff they're doing like with the nickel, like are they putting him in the best position to be successful to stop the run? I'm not sure. Again, I got to talk to somebody who's smarter than me about defense. But again, like that type of stuff to me is the difference, because I think you're looking at decent coverage structure. I think you're looking at decent pass rush in certain situations. And again, I think the coverage is driving the rush here a little bit more than the other way around. Again, they still need to find kind of this, you know, this stud pass rushing presence. But I think on first and second down, they were much more efficient than they've been. I think, again, like the coverage stuff was really impressive to me. Chris Jones with a couple PBUs, like in tight man coverage, like not man coverage, but like, for example,
Jonathan
there's that
Jones.
One.
Yeah, early
Jonathan
on.
Jones. Jonathan Jones.
He had three passes defended all year, and then he was in phase like between the receiver and the ball twice in the first couple of drives. It was harder. I will say, it's funny to say this because the Cowboys moved it up and down the field and had 21 points, but I was saying this watching with a few people gathered around at Christmas. I was like, this is the hardest it's been to complete passes against them. Like, yeah. Dak Prescott was flirting with 50% complete all game long, and it's not like he was always like just missing open guys, which happens sometimes. Like, they were actually breaking up some passes and in areas where he's got to throw it to small windows. Now, when they gave things up, they gave it up loud. And again, 6 for 6 on fourth down is going to do that. But if you get to 20 third downs, it means you're doing something right on first and second down.
I think that was the thing that was so frustrating. I'm like, man, you did it. You did the hard thing. You got them to third, and a lot of these were third and long. I think the touchdown was a third and 11, right? And so they're in like this cover two invert, and Quan Martin's playing the run through player in Tampa 2, and he just doesn't get any depth. And I'm just kind of like, and I don't know what the coaching point is there. Maybe they're worried about a draw or some type of scramble or something like that, and he's got to wait to see the quarterback initiate his drop. But there were just some kind of unusual mistakes, like in those down and distances, right? Like the second down runs were absolutely murderous, right? Like you get in, they kind of spread you out, they get you in formation, the nickels removed from the box, and they would attack like with some type of quarterback, with some type of running back, like pop, like single back power, and it would just gash for like 15 yards. Here's a check down to Lipke in a, when you, they get to an empty, they get to empty, you check to cover two, you got to rally and make a tackle. It's going to be third and eight if you make a tackle, third and nine. You miss the tackle, it's third and one. They convert the next time on a fourth and one. It's just, that was the thing that was really, like when you went back, when I went back and watched, like, shoot, even the sack that Von Miller has, that Frankie Louvu kind of gets the roughing the passer call on, like that, like all of those moments, when you look at it, you're like, on the whole, like, you know, I do the green, red thing with my ledger. Like there's a lot of green in this game, man, of just good, well, like good tackles, good run fits, good coverage. You're like, man, that's a big time football play. And then for whatever reason, on third down, on third medium, third long, you get the miss. Like Mikey Sanders still missing a tackle on George Pickens, right? And he runs up the sideline for an extra 10 yards. You're like, that is so uncharacteristic of Mikey Sanders as a player, right? Or whoever. And so I don't know, like it was a really interesting game to go back and watch because obviously there was 90 plays or whatever it was, 87 plays. But on the whole, I was like, man, this is much better defense than it was earlier in the season, specifically in that first game. And yet they couldn't capitalize on these moments that they'd earned, these third and longs, these fourth, like the fourth and three or whatever it is. And so I think that's got to be incredibly frustrating for the staff going back and watching the film today.
Mikey's game in some way was symbolic of the team's game too. Cause I thought as the game went on, he did some good things. He had a big PBU in the, I think it was the second quarter of the game, but that first drive is going to be rough for film study with the boys. He got trucked at one point.
That's right. Yeah.
It happens when you're willing and physical like he is. I mean, you're taking on big backs and that was a gigantic back and Williams coming downhill. That's going to happen. So he gets trucked. And then not long after that was the play where he kind of dives at Pickens' feet and gives up all the yak on that out route. But he, you know, he kept swinging. He got back up. You give him credit for that. And similarly, you want to talk about symbolic. So I just looked it up. You're right. So 10 of their 20 third downs, half of them were third and six or more. And in fact, 9 of the 20, so almost all of those 10 were third and seven or more. Most of those early, like the 10 that were not, came early. So on the opening drive, like some third and ones, third and two, stuff like that. So as they got them into those longer down and distances that you felt, not coincidentally, that's when they started to set up more of those fourth and longs and or get them off the field with punts as the game went on. But yeah, 10 times they were in third and six or longer. I want to talk about Johnny Newton. What a game he had as a pass rusher. Johnny Newton is a guy when they drafted him out of Illinois that I was so excited about. I'm not going to sit here and pretend to have watched a lot of Illinois games. But what I do is I ask people around the league normally. I'm like, hey, what do you think about this guy? I have buddies, that, you know, some of them that are involved in scouting departments or whatever. And everyone that I talked to, a handful of people said, dude, what a pick. Like we had this guy in the first round or we thought this guy was going to be a beast or whatever. They're like, go back and watch him. And then you watch his sizzle reel. I've been so wrong on him, so loud wrong, but I just loved him as a pass rusher, pocket pushing, up the field, a guy that could be an impact player. And damned if he didn't look like he was back at Illinois in this game. Like 2 years in, Logan, I've basically just not closed the book, but I'm like, all right, I just was wrong. This is not a thing. And this is the scary thing about December football. You got to tell me how to evaluate it or what I saw here. But now I'm all the way back in where I'm like, I knew it. He's the guy from Illinois. This is a beast pass rusher. Like, it's going to happen. He unlocked the – and it was three sacks, but it was four plays. He had two half sacks. Yeah. He had two full sacks. So effectively involved in four sacks for this team where he was a pain in the butt for the Cowboys. This is kind of what I thought games would look like semi-regularly, and they just haven't.
Yeah, so obviously really stoked for Johnny that he has a performance like this. I think, okay, so I'm trying to figure out the best way to present this information to people at home, right? So like when you talk about like pass rushing, right? There's like something to my eye that I would characterize as a win, right? You've got quick hands, you get to an edge, you're pressing the quarterback, right? To me, again, like these are good plays. So don't like, this is not, I'm just trying to give context to it. I don't think he has any rushes of the rushes that you described. I think he has like a 22% pressure rate in this game, if I'm not mistaken. Where, so again, where he's like definitively winning, like just clean win to the quarterback getting the football. And so I do think a lot of this is just he got more opportunity in pass rush situations, and he's a great worker. Like his work rate is incredible. On runs, it's great. In pass situations, it's great. And so he's working. And then the first one, Preston Smith kind of flushes him right to him, right? Bobby Wagner flushes him right to him, right? The one that he has is like a pass. It's like a play action pass. He does a great job kind of shoulder overing, but Kinlaw picks the guy that's kind of trying to block him, and he gets a free run to the quarterback. So these are good plays. And I think it's really good for Johnny to get this level of confidence and for us to be talking about him in this way. But I still think for him to be like this quote unquote stud pass rusher that's winning all these reps and, you know, winning one-on-ones as a pass rusher, like, I think he's still got a little ways to go to be that. But when you see this, is this, to me, this is what I'd say to fans, is that, like, I think you're seeing the foundation being set for a guy that can and deserves a larger role next year. But I want to kind of temper expectations to say this is the outlier at the moment, not the rule, in terms of a guy who's going to have a bunch of sacks moving into next season.
Two things. His statistical performance was incredible. Like, he may win Defensive Player of the Week in the NFL. I'm not joking. He had nine tackles, dude, at D tackle. He had nine tackles in this game.
I'm with you.
He had three sacks, which is like, hey, Myles Garrett called. He wants his game back. He had five quarterback hits in this game and two TFLs. If he doesn't win Defensive Player of the Week, I'll give you a dollar. Like, his performance was ridiculous statistically. Now, what you're saying, contextualizing it, is 100% true. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying, you find me the last time, and I might look this up and as homework and text you. I think it was
2015, Preston Smith, actually. I was on the team when he did it. That's the last time someone had three sacks in a game.
So that's a good stat. I was going to say, when a D tackle on this team has had nine tackles, three sacks, five quarterback hits, and two TFLs.
So this is a question I got for you.
It's been 20 years.
I have a hard time with this. Is they double count sacks as tackles. Do you know that?
Yes, I do know that.
That always bothers me. It's like, this is a sack. It's like, you know what I'm saying? It's anyway, that's a conversation for another day. But
as quarterback hits, they don't count as tackles for loss.
So they do. They'll count them as, like, it depends on what service you're using, but they'll count them as so that nine tackles, three of those are sacks, right? That he's gotten over the course of the game. And,
of course. Yeah.
So that always is like, I don't understand why we double count those.
But the TFL stat, I believe, and I'm just clarifying this on the site here, sacks do not count as tackles for loss. The TFLs, I believe, are generally in the run game.
Okay.
But right. They count as tackles, and there might be sites to count them. But I agree with you. There is some carryover generally. But
yes,
here's, I guess, my larger point, Logie. You go back after a game, and you find a D tackle that had that many tackles, sacks, quarterback hits, and TFLs. I'm saying it's like a 98th percentile statistical performance. Now, that does not mean it was that dominant. I'm joking when I say he's Myles Garrett. Like, it didn't feel like that, obviously. Mm-hmm. That's not my point. But my point is, for a guy that normally plays 26 snaps and we're like, was he on the field or not?
Right.
This was pretty damn good. My question, I guess, is when you talk about this is just the guy getting more opportunities and, like, you know, he's a hard worker, which I see that when I watch him. There's nobody that chases plays down with his, like,
right.
I mean, isn't that a thing? Like, he is hilarious to watch, like, as a chase down dude or just, like, running down the field after a play. Like, I do love that about him. But I guess my point is, then why wouldn't he play more?
I think
the run game. Is he as bad against the run as I perceive him to be?
So that's a good question. That's a good question.
And kind of a hard question. Better way to say it, but.
Yeah. So what I will say is I think, like, he's not the biggest guy in the world. He doesn't have the longest arms in the world. And I think he does struggle in certain run situations, right? Physically, he's always going to struggle, right? But again, like, that being said, like, so does Kinlaw. And, like, I want to talk about Kinlaw here for a second, like, after we talk about Johnny. So I do think, he struggles against the run. And I think there are times where he's not super dynamic as a pass rusher. Like, he just gets sticky to blocks. And I think a lot of that is just him growing as a player. And so I think this is an excellent performance by Johnny to get these kind of tackles, to get the sack production. Because again, like sacks, say what you want about him. Like, and again, I'm kind of trying to put some context on it. Like, you got to be around
smartly
the football,
so.
Right?
Smart, because it's necessary after a game like that where I'm just like, it happened.
Right. And so, like, those are all good things. But I think this does not mean to me that he's arrived. This is a really good performance, something that can be built upon. So that's something that I think is really important. You know what I mean? It's just important context. And that's all I'm trying to do. Like, I'm so happy for Johnny. I think this is great. It's a great performance. But again, it's not like this is going to be happening every week, I don't think, just based on what I've seen. And again, he puts himself in a good position to make this happen often because of how hard he plays. But there are some physical limitations, some technical development that needs to occur for him to become the player that I think you're thinking of. Like, B. Mitch was kind of like, oh, yeah, he's built like Aaron Donald. And I think there's always going to be that comparison because of the body size and shape. But the thing about those really technical undersized interior pass rushers is they are excellent with hand placement and they have usually above average length, which Johnny doesn't have. So he's going to have to find other tools and other mechanisms of contending with some of those limitations to be a really, really productive player. So you mentioned the run game. I think, like, there are times where I'm like, man, this is not good. He did not take this double team on well. But there's a couple plays in the game, like we just talked about, where they're trying to run this pitch to the perimeter. He does a great job fighting over the down block and runs down a running back. And he's 300 pounds. Like, that's fantastic, right? There's another couple where he's playing on the back. He's playing to the front side gap. He plays across the guy's face and makes a tackle kind of two-gapping, which is exactly what you want to see. But that's going to take time to continue to develop. And I think it's important just to say, like, yes, are we excited for Johnny? 1,000,000%, man, this is a great performance. He should be really stoked about it. But it's also like it is a step. It's not the end destination. And he's got to keep working to get to like this dominant player or this really significant player that I think everyone was expecting when they drafted him in the second round.
It's a great point, and you can see why Logan Paulson contextualizes better than anybody. And there's value in bringing that to the table. Yeah. And if it sounded like I was saying, like, this is now what he's going to be every game, that's not how I feel.
No. Right. I know you weren't saying that, but I was talking to Tana when I was talking to B. Mitch.
Exactly.
I'm like, everyone thinks this guy is like God now. And again, like, he had a good game, but, and I hate doing this because it's like, I'm pouring cold water.
It's important. But here's what I would say. Like, first of all, it's just a reaction of like, man, we've all been waiting and he's such a good dude and like, yes, you want this for him, right? So there's a little bit of like cart before the horse stuff. But, you know, I think you would say the same. But like, I don't view football as that linear anyway, where like, yeah, you do this and now it's what you are. Like, it's just nice to see it. I will say there's this thing I reference on the show sometimes too, where like in baseball, scouts talk about just needing to see that ceiling ability and then they can close their books.
Absolutely.
And go home. But I don't even view this game as that per se, where I'm like, okay, now I've seen it, I know it's in there. Because I don't even think it was like overly dominant in that way. Like, I don't think he, to your point on like winning or just bullying guys or like doing crazy things with moves, I think it was like a game where a lot of dots got connected, like the stars aligned, yeah, a little bit. But it was healthy. It was a good step that, and it felt good. With him, I do wonder, I jokingly talk about like, oh, the guy I predicted out of Illinois. I don't know that guy's ever walking through the door, but I just wonder if he can improve enough against the run to become a well-rounded, really good player, or if this is like a dude that you bring out on passing downs. Because I always knew he was small, but he plays in the run game. Like, he gets moved easily, in my opinion, and that leads to problems. So even in this game, isn't he? They were getting gashed in the run. You're like, damn, yeah, where's De'Ron Payne when you need him, right? Like, they, yeah, were getting chewed up in the first half. And then, he, you know, on a passing down, he'd make a play. And I'm not saying that was all his fault, but I'm rooting for the guy. It was good to see him produce. Frankly, this is what a lot of us have been wanting. Between Newton, Bill, Sinnott, like, a lot of the kids got involved. Traylon Burks flashed. Like, give me these games at the end of the year every time.
I wanted to finish this on Johnny Newton. So one of the things I think people are going to go look at is like PFF run grade Johnny, and same thing with Kinlaw. And one of the things is I actually think the run defense has gotten better as their grade has decreased. So I looked up like how they measure good run defense PFF. So if people are looking at that, just to give you some context here, they give you a minus if you finish attached to a block Okay. So what Kinlaw has been doing, what Johnny have been doing a good job of, is they've been sitting double teams and really like holding gaps much, much better than they were earlier in the season. And I think we've seen a much significant improvement in the run game in terms of run defense. Like Bobby's getting a bunch of tackles, Frankie's showing up, Jordan McGee's playing better. We feel the safeties and the run fits a little bit more, right? And I would look to those guys as a big reason why that's gotten better. And just to give the context of like, well, people say, oh, he had a 40% run grade or whatever the heck it is, right? They are grading it in a way that I think is different than the coaches here are asking them to perform. And so with regards to Johnny specifically, like I think he actually had a pretty good game in the run fit this week. He's holding his gap. He's making sure guys are getting to the second level. Exactly right. Same thing with Kinlaw, whose grade has gone through the floor, but you don't feel the splash plays, but in terms of playing in the context of the defense, I think both those guys did a good job of that against the Dallas Cowboys.
Logan Paulson, Grant Paulson on Take Command. All right, one last game now for the Commanders coming up in Week 18. They play the Eagles again. We'll see if Philly's playing any starters. One of the big storylines this week going into that game will be Philly going for a two-point conversion Washington didn't like, leading to a brawl, leading to Dan Quinn taking some issue with it after the game. But we'll save all that for an upcoming pod. Logan, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year coming up to the Paulsons. Next time we chat, we're previewing the Eagles, man. Enjoy what's left of your holiday.
Thanks, man. You too, buddy. Always a pleasure catching up.
Big thanks to our producer, Evan O'Brien, for Logan Paulson, Grant Paulson, saying so long. Thanks for checking us out on Take Command.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Capital One Arena on March 7th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With Masterclass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With Masterclass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch Masterclass. and 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. Masterclass.com/audio.